Welcome to the Neo-Narcissism Podcast, hosted by emotional intelligence specialists Kim and Jackie of Element Q, alongside strategic psychotherapist Brad Kaufman.
Hi everyone, we're back. Welcome to the Neo-Narcissism Podcast. We're going to introduce a bit of a scale to look at in terms of behavior. Is that accurate? Would you say that's what...
Yeah, absolutely. A scale or a spectrum.
Spectrum?
Yeah.
So
it can also be a tool for your toolkit of how to navigate the neo-narcissistic world.
Exactly. It's a great tool for your toolkit.
Yes.
Well, I'll let one of you introduce this concept.
We've talked about it before. In passing, you've heard of us use language, but we're going to dive into it deeper today. And basically what the spectrum is, on the one far end, it's the what we call the badass spectrum. On one far extreme end, you have doormatting, which is basically like an over-accommodator. On the other end, you have an asshole who is basically a jerk, somebody who is highly demanding, entitled, and demeaning to some degree. And like I said, the person on the other end is highly accommodating. The most healthy place to be is right in the middle, what we call badass, where you're neither a jerk nor a doormat. You maintain healthy boundaries and a healthy well-being in relation to other people.
So where do we want to take it from here then, as we talk about how to sort of navigate the spectrum and how to figure out how to land more often in that badass realm?
I think it becomes really hard to distinguish, because the reason narcissism is so successful is that we empathetic people in relationship with narcissists are groomed to be doormats. And that's also seen as a socially acceptable place to be in the world, to be accommodating, to be a very kind, whatever that image is, that you try to make things easier for other people in your life. And that puts you in this doormat position that you think is what we're supposed to be doing.
Mm. In psychology, one of the words that we use for that is agreeableness, versus less agreeable or more disagreeable.
I think it's also, just to tweak it a little bit, I think it's doing those actions, right? To maybe, it might feel like you're supporting somebody, or just trying to accommodate out of kindness and love, because we do that sometimes, but not at the expense of your own self, which I think is where it goes sideways into, like, just trying to do a kind thing into actually causing harm to yourself when you're in that position.
Yeah, here's a bit of an example, a small example. So I like to make food for people when they have babies, because I really appreciated when somebody made a meal for me, a home-cooked meal for me. So when we know people that have kids, we tend to make them a meal. When my brother had a child, maybe it was his second child, I made him a meal, but then it turned from one meal to like five meals, and he would just come into my house, take all the food, and leave. And it didn't feel like it was being appreciated. It didn't feel valued. I just felt gross afterwards, because I was like, I overextended myself, but way too far. Whereas if I make a meal for another friend, it's usually one or two meals and it's really appreciated and it has a different feeling to it. Does that make sense?
So it totally makes sense, because again, we're running into that distinction of being pattern. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, that's what the narcissistic scale is all about. I mean, we can all be entitled at times. We can all be envious at times. We can all be all of those types of things. But when it's a pervasive pattern of behavior, that's when things start to get out of balance. So as soon as he started to take advantage of that and was pushing it more into a pattern of behavior, and now it's an entitlement or an expectation, especially an ongoing one, it all of a sudden shifts into a different gear or a different territory at that point.
Yeah.
There's an element of taking advantage.
Yeah. Well, and then just being the doormat, as opposed to an empowered person doing this kind act, because I feel it's loving, it's coming from a loving place, it's not being abused. Like, it's a different exchange versus just sitting there laying down while he walks over me and takes the food and leaves. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is this notion of, in healthy relationship, you're kind of able to lay your life down for the sake of the other.
Yeah.
as long as they're doing the same thing, mm-hmm. right? So in order to accommodate or be adaptive, it's so these things are strengths within a healthy relationship because the other person is doing a certain form of accommodation or adaptation themselves, and you run into this nice balance. The only challenge is within a narcissistic relationship, it really depends on one person being on the asshole end of the spectrum, which is the narcissist, and the other person being on the other end so that the relationship remains balanced. And it's very interesting to see what happens when the person who's getting walked all over moves into that more central position, the badass position, because it requires, again, that rebalancing within a relationship for the narcissist to basically meet them there. But the narcissist really wants to push them back into this doormatting position again.
Yeah. I think that's a really great imagery for that, right? It's almost this sort of teeter-totter action. You have the doormat and you have the asshole, and that's keeping balance. Not healthy, but it's keeping balance. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, so then let's talk more about what happens when one moves, usually the doormat moves to the badass. I would say that it will challenge the other person, the narcissist. We may get backlash. So the narcissist might level up in their tactics that they use for control and power. It might, for the former doormat, feel a bit more, yes, right? It might feel a little out of balance to make that shift. I think people could feel like they're being unloving because love is looking different from a badass standpoint than from a doormat standpoint.
Oh, that is so well said. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to slow it down.
I was going to say, can you clarify who feels it? Like, because that, I think, can be from both perspectives.
Well, I think more so the doormat will experience an expression of love differently and in a more balanced way in terms of their own self and their expression of love to the narcissist. Does that answer your question, Jackie?
Yes. I guess what I was seeing is that I wasn't sure, just to bring clarity, is when you're used to being a doormat and you move to a badass, if you also feel like you're not being as loving to the
narcissist. That's right. Yes, yes. That's exactly what I was trying
okay.
to get at.
Okay.
It can feel like you've withdrawn love
yeah.
because you're showing it differently.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I don't know if it's necessarily showing it. Yeah, I know what you're saying, mm-hmm. but it's more like, it's not necessarily showing it differently, because I don't even know if those are loving actions. It's just you're doing it to survive.
Well, to be a badass.
I disagree.
Yeah. See, yeah. I would say being a badass is the most loving position you can actually be in. It's not the nicest position to be in, but it's the kindest position.
Yeah. Yes. No, what I meant was that I think I'm getting my thoughts mixed up. We'll see if it comes back to it. But yeah, it's almost as if there's like clarity around what actually is loving to somebody. Because I think when you're a doormat and you're making all this food and doing all of these things, you think that that's equals love because that's what the narcissist might mm-hmm. be responding to in that mm-hmm. moment. Mm-hmm. So if you stop making the meals for them, and they're not responding, that's a loving position for you because you're not extending yourself, but it might feel like you're actually still not loving them because you're not making the meals or doing the same stuff you used to do. So what I'm saying is it becomes a duality internally to stand in that position as a badass because you might be questioning yourself, like yourself internally.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, and I think that's what you're saying
yep.
too,
yeah, okay.
because yeah, a lot of times when people move from that doormat position and move themselves further up to the more central balance space on the scale, they definitely do. They definitely feel like I'm being the biggest jerk in the world when really they aren't being a jerk. I mean, that's way on the other side of the spectrum, but because they've moved, because I've become so accustomed to this side, and I think this is what you're saying too, Kim,
yeah.
is I've grown so accustomed to these type of accommodations and behaviors and accommodating the demands of the narcissist that to move even up to that middle position feels like, yeah, they're being a total jerk.
Yeah.
Somehow. And so it feels that way, and this is a key distinction, the difference between the way something feels, that it may feel true mm-hmm. versus what is true. Mm-hmm. And those are often two very different things.
Yeah. So I've been in this position where I've been the doormat and have moved more towards being a badass. And it was like, it was as if, I don't know, you're starting to train for something, but you haven't built up the muscle, the endurance, the strength. And so you go to train for that, or maybe actually it's more this, you didn't train for it. You just started to do it.
Right. That's a good
that's
way to
more
say
accurate.
It.
You yes. didn't train for it. You just decided to go run the marathon. Uh-huh. So that's what I'm going to do tomorrow. I'm just going to go run a marathon. And you go and do that. And it actually can feel painful, uh-huh. right? Mm-hmm. Because these emotional shifts can feel painful, physically painful. It's exhausting. You might feel like you're sort of always paying close attention to make sure you're behaving the way that you are choosing to behave in a more empowered and loving to self way. And so it can feel really uncomfortable to mm-hmm. start to make that shift and to move through that. However, I would say that the health that comes from that, not only for the doormat, but I believe also for the asshole, is, I think it really it creates an opportunity to move it to a healthier position. And the doormat is moving to a healthier position regardless, mm-hmm. with the invitation for the asshole to move to the healthier position as well. And it's an incredibly empowering feeling. There are moments that you though will question whether you're being the asshole. Because again, it's just the polarizing difference in the change, the contrast. However, 100% would recommend it.
Yes.
100%.
Exactly. And as Kim's saying, right, the distinction between nice versus kind. Mm-hmm. In relationship, it is kind to maintain healthy boundaries. Mm-hmm. But it may not feel nice. It may not feel nice on either side. Like, have we talked much about kindness versus nice?
No. We haven't, but we also really love that distinction. So yeah, let's go there.
Yes. So, well, this is my take on nice versus kind. Nice is just accommodating. Nice is making sure that everybody feels comfortable all of the time versus kindness is being truthful, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes truth hurts. Mm-hmm. So in my experience, I have a group of really close friends. And out of kindness, my friends have been incredibly hard on me, mm. right? But it's in a direction of personal development or in recognizing a truth. So if they were nice to me, they would have maintained a level of comfort. So they wouldn't have put me in that position of challenging me to be a better version of myself, right? They would have just let me drift in the direction I was going. But out of kindness, and quite honestly, the most kind things spoken to me are some of the most difficult things I ever needed to hear, but also some of the most respected things that I've ever heard from somebody, right? Respected and respectful.
Well, those are the people then that are safe,
mm-hmm.
right? Those are the people that you know you can trust and rely on. I think it is deeply loving.
In healthy relationships.
Yes.
So a narcissist, though, when you use true kindness with a narcissist, mm-hmm. they will run. Because what they want is nicety. They want niceness.
They also will likely either directly call you an asshole or at least yeah. allude to that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're just going to play into your feelings and yeah. try and gaslight and reinforce
gaslight,
that.
Yes.
Right?
Gaslight so. That.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those. That's kind of what I was trying to get at earlier is it's like you decide, yeah, you're gearing up. You're not going to be the doormat anymore. You're going to set these boundaries for yourself and be kind, not nice. But then it's like either you self-gaslight because that's what you're trained to do, or then the narcissist mm-hmm. says one thing and then all of a sudden you're just cycling back to doormat because it takes that much more, like you were saying, energy, everything when you're not familiar with doing it to stand in that place.
Mm-hmm. So apparently there's a badass muscle.
There is a yeah. badass muscle.
And it needs to be developed, exercised, intentionally understood.
I think too, there's a lot of value, and I think this is just such an important piece to let our listeners know about as well, is that it's okay for people to be uncomfortable. It's mm-hmm. do not As a former doormat, do not rob people of their opportunity to learn something about themselves. Mm-hmm. Right? And so when you're in a doormat space, when they're uncomfortable, you're just doing whatever you can to make them comfortable. Right? Which is, I think, very unloving, because you are robbing them of that, of the opportunity of what's sitting there for them. So let them be uncomfortable and let them be in their pain. And you can still be there to support them and love them in a healthier way, with them being responsible for it.
Let's just all let that sink in really deep. I think that is a priceless recommendation. Again, there we're looking at a distinction between what is comfortable and what is safe. As doormats, if it's like we just want to keep things comfortable, mm-hmm. there's not a clear distinction between safe and comfortable, or healthy and comfortable. So my friends approaching me and being kind and making me feel uncomfortable with a truth that actually makes me a better person. Yeah, uncomfortable, but I was perfectly safe. There was no danger there whatsoever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the narcissist will gaslight you, and they will literally paint a picture that you're creating an unsafe environment, that you're now an unsafe person, mm-hmm. because you're not making them comfortable. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So muddy.
It feels muddy. I think it can feel muddy at times, but I think that is super crystal clear.
No, it's clear, the explanation, but just how the gaslighting, it just gets messy if the narcissist is successful and when mm-hmm. you try to bring yourself in and then you get back down. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we talk about gaslighting?
Gaslighting. Manipulate someone by psychological means into questioning their own sanity.
Yeah.
Pretty clear. Yeah. Pretty specific.
Yeah. To make them question their own sanity mm-hmm. or their own perspectives or.
Yeah. So in this example, when you're trying to be a badass and not a doormat, and they're telling you you're not being nice anymore and loving and kind, that'll make you question everything.
Mm-hmm. Especially as a doormat, that's your foundation.
Yeah.
That you're a loving and kind person, yes. if you behave in this way.
Yeah.
And so you're not doing that anymore. So it almost logically makes sense that, oh, well, maybe I'm not. Although that is the mechanism of gaslight.
Yeah.
Right? That question comes into play.
And then essentially it attacks the narrative or the self-concept that you hold of yourself. And so we tend to hope that people will carry the same belief about us that we carry about ourselves. And so the concept that we have will want to correct that, but they'll use the lack of accommodation as proof. And that's how they gaslight us. Now, like extreme gaslighting, they will even get you to question your recall. And even though, like I've actually had this experience where conversations were recorded and you go back to the conversation and it's literally like they will deny that exact thing, or they will deny what is printed on paper. It's like, how can you deny that? Well, no, you're just misreading that. Well, I can't misread it. It's saying it right here. How else am I supposed to look at that? Mm-hmm. And then you see them spin things, and they spin really, really hard.
Or they'll change topics a little bit to grab something else that you've wronged them by, mm-hmm. right? And drag that in. Mm-hmm.
So, and as we always say, you don't know how to deal with something until you know what you're dealing with. And when you know what you're dealing with, you can see the game that they're playing. Mm-hmm. And now, in certain situations, when people are being manipulative towards me, I feel I can see right through it now. Not getting pulled into it, not getting gaslit in mm-hmm. the same way. And that feels very empowering, yeah. right? That's being in that badass position where it's like, okay, I can totally see through this game. And if you're able to use really good self-awareness, right, emotional intelligence and body awareness of your emotions, you're light years ahead of where you would have been if you weren't aware of those types of things. Mm-hmm. So I can feel now a certain something like so distinct now, like something is off and I cannot react in this moment. I just need to collect information, collect energy to really stay grounded and centered within the badass position.
That's cool. That's so fantastic.
Yeah.
That is that then a little bit of, in our last episode, we talked about this idea of sort of misaligning or the skepticism. Is that a little bit of that, leveraging that?
Yes.
To empower you a little bit, to be like, just wait. Just stay here and wait.
Yeah. Do you want to touch on that misalignment and just that sense that something is misaligned?
Sure. I think that was actually a really great example that you just gave, right? When you're interacting with somebody and you can feel like what's being presented on the outside, so the words being spoken, maybe the nonverbals that are being used, are telling one story, but under the surface, so whether that's an energetic exchange, we all gather so much information energetically, whether we're aware of it or not, that we're responding to. So if you're attentive to that, as well as to what is on the surface being presented, when those don't fit, when those feel misaligned, or you may feel it as a sense of like, nothing wrong is being said here, but I have this sense of mistrust, or I'm not sure about this person yet. That might be pointing to a misalignment and to just wait. So for me, I pause there and be like, okay, I'm going to just sort of, again, gather more information, see what else is going on here, and see if evidence or proof lands one way or the other. Right?
See, I really like that because now you're talking at a level of awareness. And I also love the word pause. Mm-hmm. Now, pause can be a massive tool in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And as a badass, using pause as a specific tool, because it doesn't mean that you're stopping or you're disengaging. You're basically just putting on pause, and it allows you to collect information and to remain centered despite what storm might be happening around you.
It also sort of delays judgment, right? Mm-hmm. So that pause allows you to not make your judgment yet. Your judgment about whether this is an awesome person I want to spend all my time with, or, oh, I immediately don't trust this person and I don't want to be with them at all. Mm-hmm. There's an in-between there. Right. So, and the misalignment might not be so intentionally crafted. It might not have anything to do with you. It might just be that somebody is going through whatever they're going through in their day and their life. And it just, and they're trying, they're making an effort, but there's something misaligned. So I'm not even suggesting that you use that misalignment as a reason or a justification to step out of whatever that interaction is or that relationship might be. It's just an indication to wait, take a pause there. Something else might be going on, and you can check in and then sort of test it out before you really know enough to make a decision. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think that's a key distinction too, is the difference between collecting information and deciding upon something, mm-hmm. right? Or stepping into an action. And oftentimes it is important to just be an information collector. Mm-hmm. You know, before you do a certain action or have a certain response. Because, mm-hmm. Reactivity tends to be like the non-discriminative, information collector. It's just reflexive like this. So, and even if you notice, as we've kind of touched on before, even if you notice a reflexive reaction that you're experiencing, like even like physiologically within your body, it does come down to, okay, what are you going to do with that now? Mm-hmm. Right? How are you going to respond to your own experience at this time? And that's all part of being a badass too.
Yes. And it also requires you to have some level of self-awareness to know what is happening for you, because you also, that misalignment could be triggering. And if you know what that trigger is about, well, you want to know what that trigger is about if that's happening for you, because you will judge not based on the current event and situation. You will judge based on your history. So that's not really fair to the other person either, as well to yourself. So just that little bit of information there to be aware of, right? As to why this interaction isn't feeling quite right, whatever that means for you, mm-hmm. right? Is it my stuff? Is there something going on here? Again, pause, mm-hmm. wait it out. Because the information mm-hmm. gathering isn't just external with the other person. It is, we're talking about that in terms of relation. But there's also a pause and an information gathering internally for yourself.
That's really important, or a great way to say it, because of that internal information, like you're talking about, that internal emotion, it's just so important. Mm-hmm. So now these are all skills that a true badass has. And what you can see is a badass is emotionally intelligent as well as relationally intelligent. And so this is why it's kind of a muscle that we have to develop over time. And there are ways to develop this. And it's like anything else. Once you exercise it, you learn how to use it.
Mm-hmm. I will tell you, the freedom that comes from it, like the internal freedom that comes from it, the true power that you can stand in with that, and the gentle, loving kindness that it feels like internally to embody that experience, I think it's everything. It will change. You change yourself, you change your relationships, you change how you lead. So it really filters into everything.
I think too, once you learn how to flex the muscle, you have more energy because you're not expelling so much to accommodate all the people around you.
100%. Mm-hmm.
One side effect of being a doormat is that you feel exhausted all the time.
All the time.
So that's one symptom to look out for. A lot of times doormats will end up with autoimmune diseases because that over accommodation over time just drains all of your adrenal glands and drains your immune system too.
So maybe it's worthwhile giving people some indications to how it happens. How does somebody end up in the doormat space? Partly for me, it was really about love. Right. So it was about trying to get and maintain love. And the narrative around that, what that looked like, is historic and from childhood. And then just sort of played out. And so your relationship to love, I would say, is also possibly misaligned and skewed. Because you just are interested in loving others and receiving love from others. And so accommodating and being kind and loving and just like, I really like this person, I just want to do a nice thing for them. There's nothing wrong with that. But that over time, and when it's leveraged against you, and then when it starts to be like, well, you didn't do that thing, and then you're somehow supposed to feel shame for not doing that thing for that person, and it is never reciprocated. I think just the habit of it and keep trying to grasp that is how you end up in that doormat space. What is just doing that repetitively for too long. Mm-hmm. And it just becomes natural and uncomfortable. It's not pleasant. I would like to hear from any listeners who actually like being in that position. It doesn't feel good to me.
Yeah, like right? A true doormatted, people are stepping on you all the time and expecting things from you all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or in certain relationships, like it may not actually transfer to every relationship in your life. It may live only in one or two areas. Mm-hmm. And in other areas, you may be able to embody more of that badass position.
I would argue you may not know it hurts that much until you realize you're in it.
Yeah. So yeah, until you can name it and really own that that's what you're doing, which in and of itself, that's not scary. That's really empowering information and almost immediately a sense of freedom with that. Mm-hmm. Right? Even if you don't know how to do it yet, just the idea of knowing that. Anytime we learn something about ourselves that we know is true, even if it's not pretty or comfortable, it, at least in my experience, is empowering. It's freeing. So I would encourage everybody to, like, if you're a doormat, own it. It's okay. It happens.
Like, adding to what you were saying, I do think it is strongly rooted in love, because we're all just trying to get to be loved and to get love. And in my relationship with it, it became about, it was almost as if me and my mom, my dad, we would do something that would get an exchange of love from the other family member. And that would work two times. But then you had to do something different to get love the next time. So it's like you're always kept on your toes. So then you learn that in order to get love, you have to be accommodating and always shift and change to have that exchange. So it's like this, you don't even know you're in it. That's what I'm trying to explain. Like, that's just what the whole family system does to do it. And you don't even realize you're doing that because you're just stuck in it I don't know how else to explain.
Yeah, and psychologically we call that intermittent reinforcement, and it's exactly what casinos use. Right? Because like you're saying, sometimes it works and you get a positive result, and sometimes it doesn't. So then you're constantly kind of making these micro adjustments to try to get the outcome that you're hoping for.
Yeah.
And you'll literally see it. Like people, you'll even talk to like people that gamble a lot, and they'll be like, if I just pulled the lever just right, they'll get a sense of how they think if they pull it right, they're going to get that number. That's literally what the brain gets trained into.
Yeah.
So, and this is kind of what social media uses and stuff now too. But anyway, that's a whole other discussion, right? Manipulating our psychology against us. Now, to add to what you were saying about this notion of how do you end up in that spot? I mean, there's a lot of motivators. I agree with you. I think the underlying motivator is to love and to be loved, right? To accept and be accepted, to express belongingness and feel belongingness. Mm-hmm. And that can happen many different ways. I mean, at least in my experience, I've kind of gotten stuck in the doormat position because of, I would say, a savior complex that I thought, oh, I could just love this person into health. And yeah, that never ends well. And
not effective strategy.
Not a highly effective strategy. In some cases, you know, your love can, in a more healthy framework, your love can bring people closer to themselves. And that type of thing. But in these extreme narcissistic cases, no, it just doesn't work that way. So that can be another motivator. Another motivator is the feeling like I bring something to the table here. Mm-hmm. Like I can make this person feel special the way they've never felt special before. Mm-hmm. And that's rewarding in a way. So then that's where the debate about, is there truly an altruistic act? So if you do something altruistic for somebody else, and you receive a good feeling for being kind or doing something for somebody else, is that actually altruistic or is it selfish? And this is where that debate, we won't get into that debate. But ultimately, again, like you're saying, over time, for that to repeat and for that to be the ongoing reoccurrence of it only flowing in one direction, that cycle of giving and receiving has to be a full cycle. It can't just be a one-way type thing, because now you're dealing with imbalance. And then, like you're saying, that can lead to the entitlement and people taking advantage of your willingness to do that type of stuff. Now, oftentimes, over time, what happens for most people in that doormat position is that they start to feel kind of angry or resentment. And it feels really foreign to them because they aren't angry or resentful people. So then they wonder, like, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
When essentially that ongoing level of over-accommodation and somebody taking advantage of you, this is the internal badass calling out to you, like, step up, right? The resentment is asking you, it's actually your friend.
Yeah.
Or even guilt becomes the voice of that internal badass saying, like, yeah, something's off here. Something's not right. And you want to be able to listen to that stuff and follow that. Oftentimes, yeah, anger and resentment are trying to be there to help you establish a healthy boundary that you haven't established.
Yeah. Well, because anger is a perfectly acceptable emotion, and it's basically our security system telling us that somebody's or something or someone has overstepped a boundary. If someone's broken into your house, it's telling us what's going on. And quite often when you're a doormat too, you're kind of like, oh, I can't be angry. You know, anger's not a good emotion, and we're taught to sweep it under the rug and not use it.
So true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I like that. That's your internal badass's calling card.
That's great. I love that.
Yeah.
Unless you're on the asshole side of the spectrum. Yeah. That's different. We're talking about doormats right now. And what essentially happens to a doormat in the prolonged sense of relationship? They constantly get stepped on. The level of respect that the other person in the relationship has for them goes down, down, down. This is where you get that devaluation happening. And then what happens to a dirty doormat at the end of the day? It gets discarded.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the karma of the doormat. And that's the weird thing about this is when you think you're doing everything right to save a relationship or pour into a relationship when it isn't balanced, you're building that karma to becoming devalued and discarded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is, let that one land too.
Oh yeah, it's a hard truth to accept. It is a hard truth. But it's, see, that's kindness. Mm-hmm. Speaking that out in truth is kindness.
Yeah. I would agree. Hmm. I don't know. I wonder if people listening to that feel uncomfortable with that information. Because from my perspective, hearing that feels relieving. Like if somebody would have said that directly to me, that would have given such a sense of relief. Because it's addressing what is, what you know inside, whether you know it consciously or not. You're being seen, right, at a really deep level. And somebody's speaking it for you. So that, from my perspective, would feel very loving and very safe and deeply kind. Doesn't mean it's not wouldn't be shocking and a little like, whoa, but hard to deny when you hear a hard truth about yourself. Much kinder than somebody just being like, oh, it's okay. No, I know you're doing your thing right. And not like, that doesn't land very well. But I'd be curious how people hear that information, if they really hear it and let it land.
Yeah.
What are you thinking over there, Jackie?
I think to be told that you're being a doormat when you're so used to being a doormat would be a pretty hard thing to hear.
Right. Yeah.
I get what you're saying, that I think that it depends on how it's framed. To me, what I'm getting the image of is if it's somebody who's being supportive and loving to me and says, I'm willing to show you how to step up and be a badass so you don't have to keep doing this, then that feels like, oh my gosh, okay, somebody's here, sees me and is willing to support me. But if it's just the information that, hey, you're being a doormat, like to me there feels like,
it's just like, delivery. Oh, shoot.
I for sure think that delivery is super important. You can still deliver hard information with kindness, as Brad was saying, right? You'd be like, are you feeling, maybe like you're getting walked all over here in this situation? Would you like that to stop?
Yeah, but I agree. Yeah, definitely the framing, you know, if you have to tell a friend this, like if you see them in a relationship where they're on the doormat side, where somebody's treating them like an asshole, to approach them with that appropriate message, loving, kind message, framed in a useful, receivable way, like you're saying, is definitely helpful.
And to stay in support. You can't just drop that bomb and walk away. Peace out.
Right.
You gotta like actually follow it up with some real support.
Right. And hopefully we're making that support easier for you. You can just say, hey, here's a podcast, listen to it, and then you can just mic drop and walk away.
That's right. And walk out of there. Peace out.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else we want to add to the doormat?
So what are, like, again, let's just kind of review the characteristics of a doormat. Characteristics.
Sure. Well, let's read the dictionary version, and then we can jump into a further definition of it.
The dictionary defines a doormat as a person who is the habitual object of abuse or humiliation by another. And there's two, right? Because there's the literal doormat. But this is really interesting because it also says a mat usually placed before a door for people arriving to wipe their shoes on before entering, pretty great imagery for a person who is the habitual object of abuse or humiliation by another. And habitual, I think, is like really key there.
Yes.
I was actually quite fascinated that definition was there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And, well, it's good it is there. And I would add to that, kind of the language that I use for it is chronically over-accommodating and over-extending and over-adapting. Usually those that are doormats are highly adaptive, which is a huge strength. Mm-hmm. But when it's used within over-accommodation or over-extension, it becomes a negative or unhealthy thing.
I would agree with all of that. And I'd like to add, doing that at the expense of care for yourself, of the same accommodations for yourself.
And I see that all the time.
I imagine you do.
I see that all the time in therapy where somebody will, you know, say something to a friend, we'll support a friend in a certain way, we'll accommodate a friend or adapt or whatever word we want to use there. But to turn that in and use that strength for themselves, they have a really difficult time doing or believing what they're even saying to their friend. Like, they could see their friend being a doormat, and they could actually step out in love to that friend and say, hey, it looks like you're kind of getting walked on here, right? And they could give them good advice, but they won't listen to their own advice, or they can't figure out how to get that embodied into action in their own life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, that's the doormat.
Mm-hmm. Should we move to the other end of the scale?
Sure. How does the dictionary define it? Let's start there.
Let's start with how the dictionary defines an asshole. A stupid, mean, or contemptible person. The worst part of a place or thing. A stupid, mean, or contemptible person.
Mm-hmm. Stupid.
Yeah, that's how the dictionary defines it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that, to me, that's that word in that like context. It's just like a little kid. You're being such a stupid, mean person.
Exactly. It kind of sounds like an asshole wrote the definition for asshole. Webster's an asshole. No. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. Contemptible, I think, fits really well.
Yeah, that fits. It's just the stupid, mean. That's a really weird...
As stupid, common, mean, or contemptible.
Yeah, mm-hmm. mean and contemptible.
I think it's more accurate.
Yeah.
I don't know if their intelligence necessarily has anything to do with being an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, with the stupid aspect of it.
Well, maybe it's ignorance. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting word. I wouldn't necessarily use that as a primary indicator for what an asshole actually is.
No.
I think arrogant and ignorant could fit well
haughty.
There. Haughty, yes. And now we're defining a narcissist, right?
I don't think they're necessarily stupid.
Mm-hmm.
No, that doesn't feel fitting for me.
Mm-hmm. Me neither. I think in a lot of ways they're very intelligent. Of course, the terms I always put on it are demeaning, demanding, and entitled.
That better.
Any other thoughts? And if you don't like how edgy, I mean, some people don't like the word asshole because they consider it, you know, a curse word or whatever. We can go with jerk, so jerk, badass, I don't know. Badass is just badass. And then
we're not changing that. <one. doing> that.
No, we need to embrace the word badass.
Yeah.
Asshole. What else could we... how does that then look in an interaction? When you're interacting with an asshole. I mean, we know the, like, sort of the bigger... Everybody's had sort of a bigger, more overt version of interacting with an asshole, right? Where it's sort of clear and like, mm-hmm, okay. And it doesn't really... Like, often that doesn't even really land because they're just being a little bit extreme in their... Or being very extreme in their behavior. And it just doesn't... I would argue maybe doesn't have as much power.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some subtler ways of being an asshole, and that gets into using people as resources, manipulating it for their own outcome and benefit at the expense of the other person,
mm-hmm.
lying, flat out lying.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anything oh yeah, deceptive.
Well? Deceptive.
We need to throw deceptive in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good.
And then a tool they will use as well a lot is gaslighting,
mm-hmm.
right? That we already addressed.
And anger.
Anger. Shame. They will attempt to shame you. Yeah. Name calling.
Oh, yeah. Name calling.
Sort of like the finger pointing.
Yeah. And then all the abuses too, like
yeah.
physical abuse, emotional abuse, psychological abuse.
What would be some of the characteristics or, you mentioned with a doormat that they tend to have autoimmune diseases. Somebody who's regularly an asshole, would they have certain health problems?
Okay, well, I don't have the research right in front of me, but through my readings, it's almost like they fare better than the doormats.
Yeah.
Because in a way, a doormat can tend to hold stuff in. Whereas an asshole just lets it all out all the time. And that's actually healthy to do. Not in the way that they express it.
Yeah.
right? And the only time that they ever run into real health impacts is when they run into people that don't put up with their BS.
Yeah.
That's the only time that things start to get messed up for them. Because if they can just find accommodators, again, life remains comfortable. Mm-hmm. Life remains fairly seamless for them. And so if they can just turn up the heat, sure, it takes a little bit of energy to turn up that heat. But if that gets a person back in check, they actually fare better.
I can see that. If you're always in a space that you can express your emotions and it really doesn't impact the, like, it doesn't come back to you. You're not held accountable or anything. So you can just kind of blah all over the place. Mm-hmm. And not hold it in, that would feel better
mm-hmm. yeah.
in some ways.
And I would argue that if you are more naturally leaning towards being an asshole, that it is actually more in alignment with potentially who you are and your historic patterns and how you just navigate the world. Whereas I'm not so sure that's the case for the doormat. I do think there's a familiarity that can happen and they just do that. But I would argue that a doormat is more uncomfortable throughout that process than an asshole is throughout the process.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I'm getting...
Because it's not really authentic to be a doormat.
No.
Right?
It's not. And I think because, like, if you're saying being a badass is the more authentic place, holding your boundaries and your terms, to me, an asshole an asshole can still express themselves, they get it off, they have boundaries. I mean, they take it too far, but that still feels like a more natural process, whereas to me, like, if we're born with sovereign beings, men and women, with inherent rights and liberties, when we're slipping into the doormat position, we're giving all that up. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not how we were designed.
That's a good point. Let's carry this a little bit further, because then all of a sudden we have to look at, in narcissism, are we talking about a covert narcissist or an overt narcissist? I would argue, now, I don't have research or any proof on this. This is just kind of anecdotal evidence. I would argue it's much easier to be an overt narcissist because you get to claim it. You get mm-hmm. to own it. And
you're not hiding it. Everybody knows.
Exactly. We all know. Yeah. I think it's the hiddenness of covert narcissism that will literally, they won't be able to get out of bed for days. And then they'll kind of regain themselves. They'll go get some supply and they'll go through and they'll have these cycles. Hmm. And this is where bipolar becomes mm-hmm. very comorbid with true narcissism. Hmm. So especially vulnerable or covert narcissism, because they have to, even though they're an asshole, they have to hide that they're an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they can be an asshole in their private life. Mm-hmm. But they can't be an asshole in their public life. And you'll even hear of it, right? You'll hear of, like, these parents who were well-respected in the community, but at home they were absolute tyrants.
Yeah.
Right?
Hmm.
I like that distinction.
Well, that's interesting because, like, it's like the covert narcissist doesn't get to be the overt asshole, even though they internally are.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and
that's, wow.
Yeah, and essentially they're lying to themselves, too, right? They don't even recognize how much of an asshole they're actually being.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they don't realize how much pressure they're putting on themselves to keep that contained, even from themselves.
Wow, okay.
And in order for somebody to maintain being an asshole, then they actually, at least in relationship, somewhat require there to be a doormat then, in order for the asshole to want to stay in the relationship.
Well, for a prolonged relationship, somebody mm-hmm. has to maintain a doormat position for a prolonged period of time. Again, that's where the patterned ongoing cycle needs to continue in that way to uphold the relationship. I mean, you'll get some assholes or narcissists that will just jump from person to person to person. So at that point, it's not necessarily, you know, not all those people need to be doormats, but they just need to be contributing or accommodating in some way. Mm-hmm. And when they can't get the full accommodation out of that person, then that's where they'll just jump to the next person and I'll keep looking for a little bit of a better doormat. But at the same time, the ideal doormat for a narcissist is, you know, attractive and intelligent and brings supply in all of these other ways as well.
What happens when you have two narcissists in relationship with each other?
Oh, you get amazing. Well, believe it or not, up front, they will have like amazing chemistry. It'll be like this big, like they're doing this illusion to each other, mm-hmm. and they're becoming what each of them want. And these don't last long, or if they are going to last, they can't spend much time together.
Yeah. So they'd have to be at the distance again, sort of like how we addressed that in one of our previous podcasts, that they can't maintain friendships close by. So maybe it's a long distance relationship. Well,
there's a marriage I know of with two narcissists together. But one's an overt and one's a covert.
Yeah, that's interesting. How does that work long term?
Well, it was interesting, some of the things you were mentioning, because it becomes a little bit of this like dance where the overt one can express and explode and do whatever. The covert sort of will be the doormat in that moment of time, but then can also utilize that being a doormat to the asshole and serve it other places and other relationships, but not to the exterior world, to the private world.
Right, right.
So then there becomes a bit of this dance, but they don't necessarily always spend time together. They have their own separate friendship circles.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But they definitely use it completely differently. And one is very, very mean. The other one isn't overtly as mean.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that, because I've seen long-term relationships with two narcissists last. Hmm. And do you know how it works? They're both married to doormats, and they're each other's secret connections.
Oh, interesting. So right. They have their own exterior supplies.
They can last together because they know there's no risk of needing to invest further than just a transactional framework.
So then though, I don't want to interrupt you. Was that okay? Because Jackie, as you were talking, like if the covert narcissist gives way to the overt narcissist at times, right, to allow their grandiosity, space for that, then would the covert narcissist not also be getting a feed as being the hero and the one who's like taking all the hits and giving that space? So they're still getting a feed. Would they not be?
Within a
victim type narcissist. A vulnerable narcissist.
Yeah, potentially.
I'm just curious. Right? I'm wondering, because why would they take that role? Right? What are they getting out of that?
The covert? Right.
The covert narcissist.
So that's what I've been still trying to figure out.
Right? So are they getting the feed off of like, because they can like to be the hero or be the victim.
The victim.
Right? So then this would take them to the victim side of things.
Yeah.
And still get a feed from that, potentially.
Yeah.
No.
Brad's processing.
Yeah.
Well, it definitely is the victim thing. Yeah.
Okay. Were they both narcissists to start with?
One, yes. The other, I'm not 100%. Like, I don't know when it shifted even more.
Okay. Because the reason that I asked...
In relationship, it did.
Yes. Because this is very common. Right, over time, people start asking, even empaths will be like, are they the narcissist or am I the narcissist? Because all of a sudden, in order to survive, you have to play their games with them. And then all of a sudden, you can potentially get pulled into a demeaning framework or a devaluing framework as an empath. And so then this is where all of a sudden people get pulled onto this narcissistic spectrum. Just because they're trying to survive in relationship with a narcissist. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's neo-narcissistic accommodation is what I would call it, right? Because not only are they over-accommodating, they're accommodating so much so that they're starting to reflect the behaviors of the narcissist.
It's interesting. I have to think about that because I think inherently it was always there historically in the family unit. But it got way worse in relationship.
Mm.
Anyways, we can come back to that another
time. It's very interesting to think about. Very interesting to think about. Now, the other thing about narcissism in general is, and I touched on it just briefly, is they're into transactional relationship, if you can. I'm doing air quotes for those that are listening. If you can call it relationship. So two narcissists can have rewarding transaction with each other. And of course, if two narcissists are married to other people, then there's no risk that the transaction has to turn into a real relationship, because oftentimes they aren't going to leave their marriages because they have a doormat that does everything for them. So they don't want to get rid of the doormat, but they want to have the excitement of the other narcissist, right? Because they get bored of the doormat fairly quickly.
Well, it gets pretty dirty after a while.
That's the thing. So then all of a sudden, it's like, here comes along another shiny narcissist, and they get to remain shiny because they only have to do this interactional and transactional thing. It's like, basically they have the conversations. I've literally seen it, right? They have the conversations of, where are we going for drinks? And then what hotel are we meeting at? Like, those are the only decisions they have to make together. They don't have to pay bills together. They don't have to parent together. They don't have to do anything together. Mm-hmm. Not a real relationship.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Hopefully we've covered asshole enough for people. If we haven't, drop us a little note and we'll come back to it.
Yeah.
Circle back. Mm-hmm. We'll fill that in for you. So the third and really most exciting part of this little triangle is being a badass. The dictionary defines badass. Shall I read that to you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it actually has three different definitions. So I will read all of them. There's two that really apply here. So the first one is a person difficult to deal with, mean-tempered, and sometimes violent.
Oh.
Yeah. Disagree.
Interesting. Like that I would take that and I would put that under asshole.
Yeah. I think totally. That's more of an asshole.
Totally.
So tough, assertive, or independent as to be somewhat intimidating. Hmm.
Interesting.
Depends on the filter.
I'm going to touch on that.
Yeah. I think we need to circle back to that one. And here's the third definition. Awesome or impressive, worthy of admiration.
Interesting. Hmm. Wow, those are all very unique.
Exactly. Wow, that's quite a shift.
It is a big shift.
Awesome.
You're mean-tempered, violent badass, or you're awesome. Tough, assertive, independent, and maybe intimidating, or awesome, impressive, and worthy of admiration.
Okay, now when we use the term badass, we're speaking mostly of point number three here, right? Awesome, impressive, worthy of admiration. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now so the first one, like I said, I would throw that under the asshole definition.
Yeah.
The second one, so tough, assertive, or independent as to be somewhat intimidating. It's very interesting because I have taken badass positions. Mm-hmm. I'll just kind of put it out there. So I used to mirror everybody that I'd come into contact with, right? It was just a natural rapport building social talent that I have. But I found when you run up against an asshole and you mirror an asshole, this is exactly what they say to you. Now, that doesn't mean that I was being an asshole back. I wasn't being demeaning and all of that type of stuff, but it would pull me into and put me firmly in the badass position. Hmm. And when I was when I would stand in that badass position, and so I've stopped mirroring people, I've started calibrating to people. Mm-hmm. But when I calibrate now to an asshole, I know I'm standing in a badass position. I've actually gotten feedback from other people who have said that, you know, that person over there, who I would deem kind of an asshole, thinks that you're intimidating and that you have a dominant personality. Yeah, which is really interesting, right? And so that's where, you know, tough, assertive, independent has to be somewhat intimidating. Why should an independent and assertive person be intimidating? Assertive is very different from, you know, being aggressive. Independent, okay, how is that intimidating?
Well, but the word intimidating isn't, like, when I read this is about, the word intimidating is about judgment. So the word intimidating is perspective from somebody else's perspective, and that's informed by all of their history and experiences, etc. So does it matter if somebody's feeling intimidated by that attitude, right? Or that embodiment?
Well, does it matter? I mean, no. Somebody might feel unsafe, but are they actually unsafe?
That's right. That's the difference.
No.
No.
They might feel uncomfortable, but they may interpret that as not feeling safe.
But yeah. I would argue, too, that in this neo-narcissistic world, I don't think many people stand in the badass position. So our filters on what it is not clear. So you people who are doormats might see a badass as being an asshole. And an asshole is also going to interpret a badass as being an asshole because they're not being a doormat.
Right.
Exactly. Right.
So then it's culturally, we try to take people out of being the badass position because that's not the game we play.
So, and then it's highly polarizing, yeah. If I'm hearing you correctly. I would agree with that, too. Like, then you're only left with either assholes or doormats.
Yeah, so the badass is going to be very different to everybody and uncomfortable to everybody.
So possibly there's a reframing of the word nice here. Because what you're talking about is people wanting, socially, people wanting others to just be nice. Just make it pleasant, just be nice, right? But as you know, this panel, we don't particularly care for the word nice. We prefer kind. And so that sort of pull to reposition back to being nice socially, as opposed to being a badass, I can see that there is pressure there, right? Because socially, the majority of people are going to want that and aren't going to really recognize what this person's really showing when they're being a badass.
Yep.
Does I have that right?
Because our filters, we don't have people to be badass examples in the world. Like, like I said, it's like they're an asshole, they're a threat, or you just be a nice doormat. Mm-hmm. There's not really anywhere in between. Right. So it's skewed. Everything is skewed to me.
Right. Mm. Well, and that's interesting because when I've stood in the badass position, I've been accused of being threatening.
Yeah.
And I would say, okay, please inform me, where is the actual threat?
Yeah.
And they can't actually say it.
No.
And then they get upset and they kind of run away. But because a badass, as you're talking about, is okay with letting people feel uncomfortable when you know they're safe.
Yeah.
A badass maintains safety, not necessarily comfort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And holding, I would also say too, because we're not necessarily taught how to hold boundaries, that as a badass, if you're holding a boundary and simply saying no to somebody, that's going to come across as being an asshole if they're not used to that, having a relationship with somebody who is okay saying no.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense. And the asshole is going to say, you're so selfish.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing about saying no. If you say no to somebody and they get upset about it, they're the ones being selfish because they feel entitled that you are supposed to say yes to them, that you're supposed to share your time, energy, all of those type of resources, right?
Fascinating?
Yeah. Well, just in that badass space, you're going to have lovers and you're going to have haters. Yeah. You are going to have those people that do admire and respect you, but you're also going to have those people that hate you. Mm-hmm. So when you have haters and you know you aren't standing in an asshole position, then you're doing the right thing.
Yeah. That's a big win. Trying to really encourage people to test out what that badass embodiment feels like would be super helpful. So what does it feel like? What traits and what qualities are we displaying when we are standing in that badass mentality?
I really like these words, and I'm going to use them.
Yep.
Assertive. Mm-hmm. Well, and awesome. Independent. Basically, the idea of independence, we talk about codependency. And so independence is this idea that you aren't enmeshed with somebody else. Mm-hmm. Now, I like how you're asking this question. It's kind of like, how would somebody actually know if they're being assertive? Mm-hmm. How would somebody actually know that they're standing in the realm of their own well-being. It may actually be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So
very likely.
Yeah, very likely, especially if you're used to being in that doormat position. It's going to potentially feel foreign to you. But at the end of the day, you can walk away and look at a difficult situation that you faced and actually feel good about it. Mm-hmm. Right? Even if it's a less than ideal situation, the way that you handled yourself in it, mm-hmm. you know, if you can walk away without any guilt or shame mm-hmm. around it.
I would add, though, if we're looking even at the word assertive, so when you're practicing moving into the badass territory, even questioning that kind of language, am I being assertive or am I being aggressive? Because did I step past the realm of badass into asshole? And give yourself some grace there. It will happen. You're trying to find a new thing, a new way of being.
Can I? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That touches on something really important. A badass, there's a little bit of a space around badass mm-hmm. where you can have some flexibility. So mm-hmm. you can go a little bit more to the asshole end of things when you need to.
Yeah.
And be more assertive, maybe even touching on a little bit of aggression to yeah. some degree. And then on the other side, you can go into accommodation. You can mm-hmm. go into the doormatting a little bit and accommodate and adapt. But you don't want to go too far out of that centralized spectrum. You mm-hmm. want to maintain that balance.
So it's really about really knowing what your boundaries are, your fence line.
Yeah. I was going to, if I can kind of yes, like please. Touch to that, my new information I've been researching is about, yeah. so I've been looking into what a trespass means. And a trespass means that somebody has caused harm or damage to you and your property. Mm-hmm. So to me, that is now, I've like shifted a lot of my filter on it. So if somebody steps in and does something that causes harm or damages, to me, that is crossing a boundary. That's committing a trespass. And the badass needs to step in and say, this is not okay. And then we would have a conversation. And we would try to resolve this. But I feel like that space has just been mm-hmm. vanquished. Does that make sense?
It does, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, we can't... Now we're kind of talking through philosophical terms yeah. and legal terms to some degree. But we run into the risk of relativism as well, right? Like, because a narcissist can perceive threat where there isn't threat. And they can claim... trespass where there isn't a trespass. And this is where, like you're talking about, we're kind of at this point in our human evolution, so to speak, where we've lost our village. We've lost, like you've talked about, you know, the groundedness to nature, to our true nature design. Mm-hmm. So, right, where is the accountability? How do we know really what is a true threat and what isn't a threat? And so it's almost like people have a hard time right now differentiating between that. That's where I think I like your word design. That's where we have to go back to our design. And what is our design actually telling us? Can we slow down, be quiet enough to listen to that still small voice? You know, some people would call that our spiritual voice mm-hmm. or the spirit within, being able to speak truth to us about a certain matter. But we've lost those practices, you know. So it gets kind of tricky.
Mm-hmm. In being a badass, I would say you're not only owning your own boundaries, you're maintaining your own sense of self, you know your values, and you get to work at maintaining that in relationships while also, which I think is important in being a badass, maintaining dignity and empowerment for those around you.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So even if people are, again, we've already talked about this, but I'll circle back. If people are uncomfortable, that's not necessarily unsafe.
Yep.
Right? So I think that's, you know, testing yourself when you're trying this on, this badass thing, as to, well, I think one, you have to get to know yourself. You have to get to know what your real true boundaries are mm-hmm. And feel comfortable holding those regardless. And then being able to speak in kind ways, truthful ways, even if people are uncomfortable and not trying to backpedal once you sense and feel or get some backlash and you feel that discomfort from people. You can feel that you've set people off. That's okay. Let's learn to like really embrace that sensation.
Yeah.
I do think if you know, are certain, and maybe have validated that somebody is really hurt by how you behaved, then maybe, you know, within conversation and really fleshing that out, that may show you that you've stepped too far outside, potentially, right? And that's okay. We're learning, right? So just bring it back in. You can clarify your intention.
I think a badass, just to add to that, is also willing and able to hold people accountable around them for their actions too.
Yeah. Anything else we want to add to being a badass?
I want to just kind of reinforce what was said there too. I mean, yeah, the things that really jump out to me with that is, like you're saying, knowing yourself, understanding what your values are, mm-hmm. right? And your depth of character, you know, assuming you're a person of depth of character, you will be able to identify what your values actually are. And two, this dignity of others, that's really, really important too, right? Do unto others as you would have done unto yourself, or of course, don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you. So that's a really important checkpoint as well, just to kind of knock down this relativism to some degree. And when we hold others accountable, we can only hold them accountable to what they have promised to or what they have agreed to, right? Because if we're going out and we're just holding people accountable because we think that they should, all of a sudden, then that puts us into the asshole position. So I just want to put the qualifier on this, that we can only hold others accountable to what they promise or what they claim or what they've agreed to. That's the only thing we can hold them accountable to.
I think that is such a valuable piece of information, because I do think you also see this in narcissism, that there's this expectation that people should just behave in certain ways, and you're getting held accountable for information you don't know about this person, right? And that you've crossed that boundary, but you don't know the boundary. You don't know what the expectation ever was. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a great note there.
And of course, as we talk about this, you can kind of see how tricky it is, especially in a world where we don't have a lot of good models of healthy badasses, yep. right? Like a lot of the badasses out there are depicted badasses are more assholes than they are badasses.
So being a badass, like you, this will circle back throughout our podcast. You'll hear it come up in the future. It's really part, I think, foundational to part of what we're doing here. So yeah, welcome to your new badass world. If you choose to step in,
yes, welcome. So if you choose, which pill do you want to take, the blue or the red?
Yeah, and it's about how to be a badass in a neo-narcissistic world.
Yes. Exactly. Yes, how to be a badass in a neo-narcissistic world. Well, as usual, you don't know how to deal with something until you know what you're dealing with. We'll see you next time.
Subscribe to our podcast channel and YouTube channel and share these videos with your friends and family.
And please join our online community at neonarcissism.tv.